Hello and welcome to the Parish Podcast. The sermon you're about to hear was delivered at the Parish in Alpharetta, Georgia, and is meant to be heard within the context of our local church community. So if you've never been to the Parish, you're missing a really big piece of the puzzle. We'd love to welcome you to join us anytime, and you can find more information or contact us by visiting our website at parishanglican.org.
We're going to read our gospel passage, Luke chapter 9, verses 28 through 43. About 8 days after Jesus said this, he took Peter, John, and James with him and went up onto a mountain to pray. As he was praying, the appearance of his face changed, and his clothes became as bright as a flash of lightning. Two men, Moses and Elijah, appeared in glorious splendor talking with Jesus. They spoke about his departure, which he was about to bring to fulfillment in Jerusalem. Peter and his companions were very sleepy, but when they became fully awake, they saw his glory and the two men standing with him. As the men were leaving Jesus, Peter said to him, "Master, it is good for us to be here. Let us put up three shelters, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." He did not know what he was saying. While he was speaking, a cloud appeared and covered them, and they were afraid as they entered the cloud. A voice came from the cloud saying, "This is my son whom I have chosen. Listen to him." When the voice had spoken, they found that Jesus was alone. The disciples kept this to themselves and did not tell anyone at that time what they had seen. The next day, when they came down from the mountain, a large crowd met them. A man in the crowd called out, "Teacher, I beg you to look at my son, for he is my only child. A spirit seizes him and he suddenly screams. It throws him into convulsions so that he foams at the mouth. It scarcely ever leaves him and is destroying him. I begged your disciples to drive it out, but they could not." "You unbelieving and perverse generation," Jesus replied, "how long shall I stay with you and put up with you? Bring your son here." Even while the boy was coming, the demon threw him to the ground in a convulsion, but Jesus rebuked the impure spirit, healed the boy, gave him back to his father. They were all amazed at the greatness of God. Okay, so that really long passage of scripture is about something that in the church we call the transfiguration. That may be a word you've heard before or not. The transfiguration is this story of Jesus, Peter, James, and John going up onto the mountain. All of a sudden, there's this amazing, glorious moment. Jesus looks totally different. He's glowing. He's shining. It's like God peels the curtain back and says, "Hey, guys, this is who Jesus really is." And it's this pretty profound moment. So I want you to imagine just for a moment, are there any artists in the room? Anybody that you would declare yourself as an artist? Not many of us. Okay, great. So if I gave you a piece of paper and your chosen art tool, whether it's paintbrushes or crayons or whatever, and I told you I want you to draw me a picture of the transfiguration, think for just a moment in your mind, what would it look like? Okay, that story that you just heard, this amazing, incredible moment, what would you draw? What would it look like? What would draw your attention? What is it that would stand out to you? For me, it would probably be centered around Jesus and Moses and Elijah and lots of light. And if I was a good artist, I'd draw people falling down on the ground and just this powerful kind of moment happening on top of the mountain. But what's really interesting is that back in the early 16th century, Pope Clement VII commissioned an artist to paint this story. Okay, it was going to be the altarpiece in the Narbonne Cathedral in France. And the artist, we all know, was Raphael. We all know Raphael because of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, probably. But we know the name Raphael. He's a very famous artist. And so this actually was Raphael's last painting before he died in 1520. So many art scholars believe this is his most important, most refined, the pinnacle of his career was this piece of art. And so the Pope says, "I want you to paint a picture of the resurrection," that story that you just heard. And so thinking of what you would have painted and thinking of what you would have put on the canvas, this is what Raphael came up with. And obviously the painting is much, much larger than this, and I hope you can see it if you're back in the back of the room. But yes, it does have Jesus and Moses and Elijah up at the top, and there's this glorious moment of splendor and grandeur, and you see Peter, James, and John kind of falling down underneath it because they don't know what to do. But the thing that strikes me about this painting, what's kind of crazy to me, is that Raphael took half of his space, half of his canvas, and spent it on the second half of this story. So when the Pope says, hey, I want you to paint a picture of the Transfiguration, he goes, oh, I will. And I'm also going to paint a picture of this child that needed to be healed, but couldn't be. And look at the tension in it. There's this aggression and anger, and people are pointing fingers, and it looks like they're piling over each other to try and see, can you heal him? Can you heal him? No, no. Why can't you heal him? Look up there. Look at Jesus. There's this amazing tension going on between what's happening on the mountain and what happens when they get down from the mountain. And I think that is what makes this painting so masterful. I think Raphael absolutely nailed the tension that we find in this passage. Because here's Peter, James, and John. They're experiencing this rapturous, beautiful moment. And Peter, in that moment, says, hey, let's just stay here. Let's stay here forever. Let's build these shelters. There were these shelters that they would build at the Feast of the Tabernacles. They would live in for a while. And he said, let's just build some of those shelters, and we'll just stay here. We won't ever leave. Let's put on a feast. Let's have a party. But they can't stay, can they? That's not the point. The point of what happens on the mountain is not staying on the mountain, it's what happens next. And when they journey down from the mountain, after seeing and experiencing this unbelievable moment, they find this boy, and all of a sudden, the disciples have forgotten that they have what they need to heal this boy. They've lost their ability, they've lost the power, they've lost the faith that they had to heal this boy. In fact, a few verses earlier in chapter 9, before what I read to you, the disciples have already done this kind of thing. Jesus sent them out. And in John 9, 6, John says that the disciples were sent out and they went from village to village proclaiming the good news and healing people everywhere. So this wasn't their first rodeo. They knew how to do this. They had done this before. They'd experienced the power of God working through them to bring healing and restoration. And if they needed confidence in that moment, I mean, how much more confidence could you possibly ask for after seeing the glory of Jesus and seeing this amazing transcendent moment? So Jesus is so frustrated and he delivers this rebuke. You unbelieving and perverse generation, how long shall I stay with you and put up with you? And you can almost sense in his voice this frustration of saying, it's not about staying forever in this moment of peaceful rest and glory. This is why I've given you these moments. This is why I've given you this revelation. So what happened? How does the story turn so quickly? How do we go from peace and such incredible moment of splendor to a moment of frustration so quickly? The disciples have seen one epiphany. That's the season that we're in right now in the church calendar, the season of Epiphany. They've seen one. They saw Jesus. Peter, James, and John saw him changed into all of his glory, but they missed an even greater epiphany, that the glory of God that's revealed in Jesus always sends us out to engage with that same God in the reality of life. That epiphany that we're not called to just stay up in the rarefied air of the mountain. We're always called to take that presence and take that life and bring it into our everyday life. Encountering God's presence always leads to engaging in God's work. Always. Encountering God's presence, no matter how powerful, always leads to engaging in God's work. And this, for us as a church, really applies to us today. Because we're wrapping up a season that we've been in for the last 4 weeks called Epiphany. And we've talked about how epiphany moments that we have in our lives are this changes everything moments. They're the aha moments where we go, oh my goodness, I can't see the world the same way. And we talked about how we can be moving on one track in one direction. And when we have these epiphany moments, we're all of a sudden shifted into a different direction and we're never the same. And for some of us in the room, we've experienced some really powerful moments over the last few weeks where God has met us and we've encountered him. Let's think back. In week one, we encountered God in our baptismal identity. If you were here, hopefully you remember that. We encountered the fact that we are, because of Jesus, children of God, loved by God, pleasing to God. And I know for some of us in the room, that was an anchor that dropped in our souls and said, yes, that's the way that I want to live my life from that reality. And then in week two, we encountered God's scandalous goodness. And we said that we're called to accept and reflect the scandalous goodness of God. God gives us goodness that we could never deserve, but it's not just for us. It's meant to flow through us. It's meant to be reflected to the people around us. And in week three, we encountered God in the body of Christ. And we realized that our freedom journey was meant to be shared. the things that have happened in our lives are not meant to be just for us. Remember, whatever God has brought you through was never meant to be just for you. It was always meant to be shared. It's always meant to be passed along to someone else. And then last week, Patrick shared with us that we're called to experience joy through radical trust. That the way to find joy is not just to pursue joy, it's not just to pursue happiness, it's to trust God. And when joy is running low, we need to look at our trust and examine whether or not we're truly trusting in Jesus. These are important moments. Maybe for some of you, there was one week that stands out and you said, yes, that was a really, really big realization for me. That was a big aha moment. But what happens if we try and stay there? We can't just stay there. We can't just have a moment where we shift directions and then decide to camp out and build a tent there forever. We have to actually, at some point, put one foot in front of the other and begin moving in that new direction. If you've ever broken a bone or had surgery before, you know how this works. I tore the meniscus in my right knee about 5 years ago. I tore it sitting on the couch, okay? So this was not like, this is not a manly injury. That's another story for another day. But I tore the meniscus in my knee and I tore it pretty badly, and so it required surgery. And if you've ever had that or a similar kind of surgery before, you know that you go in and you go under the knife, and when you wake up from that procedure, instantly that pain is gone. And instantly what was really, really hurting you has been fixed. It's been healed. Whether it's supernaturally or whether it's through the skill of a doctor, something has changed in you. But there's a responsibility, isn't there? Because when you leave the doctor's office, if you just decide to prop your feet up and just kind of chill in that moment of healing and wonderful recovery, then what happens? When you're 40, 50, 60, 70 years old, you'll never be able to move your knee again, because you have to engage in the process of little by little doing the work that they give you and beginning to stretch it and move it and grow. There's two parts to this equation. There's healing that happens powerfully, but there is a responsibility to engage in that healing work. It starts small. For some of us, it's like that image of, you know, the knee brace that has a little dial on it. We dial it just a little bit at first, and we get to move it just a little bit, and then week by week, we grow it more and more and more until we see that healing and transformation take over. And for many of us, as I was thinking about this and praying about this today, what really struck me is that I know a lot of your stories in the room. There's some of you, I don't know your story, and I'm really glad you're here. I would love to know your story if you want to grab coffee sometime. But for many of you, I know your story and I know what you've been through. And I know that for several of us, the last year to 2 years have been significant years of either intense pain or some sort of healing in the midst of that. That we've been wrestling as a community with some pretty intense things that are happening in our life. It could be something that you've done that you're reaping the consequences for. It could be something that's been done to you that you're reaping the consequences for. There's all kinds of things that we've experienced in terms of this deep pain that we're wrestling with. And for the last year to 2 years, I know many of your stories is that you've just needed a place to heal. You've needed a place to rest. You've needed a place to just allow God to give you some space to begin recovering. And for some of us, that healing needs to continue. For some of us, that space and that rest needs to continue, and I know that. But the temptation when you're in these moments, the temptation when you're in seasons of rest is to do what Peter did and to say, this is where I'm supposed to stay forever. God, I just need you to heal me. I just need you to heal me. I just need to stay here. I just need to breathe. I need more rest. And the temptation is to stay there over and over and over again and try and set up that shelter and live there. And the thing that I really feel impressed to say this morning for us as a church is that you're more ready than you realize. You're more ready than you realize to take a step towards not just healing, but actually getting back into the life that God has designed for you. Seasons of healing are meant to come, and they're meant to go in a constant rhythm of life. And for many of us, it's time for us to turn our attention towards saying, Lord, what is the next step? What is it that you're calling me to do? Just like the disciples on that mountain, we hear the voice of God saying, this is my son, listen to him. And Jesus is telling us it's time to engage. It's time to come off the mountain. It's time to get our hands dirty. It's time to begin moving again. At the very end of Peter's life, okay, so Peter, the disciple who was on that mountain, Peter, the disciple who betrayed Jesus, Peter, the disciple who was restored, the disciple who Jesus said, "You're the rock that I'm going to build my church on." Peter, the man who had these incredible visions that said, "Yes, we're going to build the church differently than any of us imagined." Peter, that had all these incredible experiences. At the very end of his life, there's a letter that begins circulating in the church. And it's Peter's, for lack of a better term, it's Peter's last will and testament. This is his last parting words to the church. And it's the book of 2 Peter. And look at the way that he begins this book. The wisdom, if Peter could write his last few dying words, this is what he says. 2 Peter 1, verses 3 through 4. His divine power. This is coming from someone who has seen divine power more than you or I have ever seen it. He has seen divine power. He knows what it's like. His divine power has given us everything we need for a godly life. Not some of the things, not 90% of what we need, not he's given us a piece of it and he will give another piece of it when we die and we go to be with Jesus. No, he's given us everything we need for a godly life through our knowledge of him who called us by his own glory and goodness. Through these things, he has given us his very great and precious promises so that through them, you may participate in the divine nature, having escaped the corruption in the world caused by evil desires. Through these things, you can participate in the divine nature. God has given you everything you need. This applies to all of those of us that are walking in the way of Jesus. He has given you everything you need for a godly life. You may not think you have it, but you do. Through the power of the Holy Spirit, you do. And that same divine power that Peter saw on the mountain is the same power that's at work within you and the same power that you need to live the life that God's called you for. And what's the purpose? It's to participate in the divine nature. It's for our boots to hit the ground and begin moving. It's not just for us to take a turn and sit and dwell in that moment forever. It's for us to come down off the mountain and begin engaging in the work that God is calling us to do. So this is really perfect for us as a church community because as of this Wednesday, we begin a new season. It's a 40-day season that we call Lent. And I'm going to explain a whole lot more about what Lent is about next week. So if you've ever been interested in what Lent is about, if you experienced Lent as a kid and hated it, come back next week. We'll talk about it because I guarantee you it's different than what you heard when you were growing up. But we're about to engage in the season of Lent. It's a 40-day journey that reminds us of the 40-day journey that Jesus spent in the wilderness. And I think this is perfect for us today because it's a reminder that for many of us, God has laid his hand on something in our life. He's given us healing. He's given us freedom. He's given us everything we need to take a step forward in the life that he's called us to live. But it's just time for us to have the courage to take that step. And that's going to be different for every single one of us in the room. So here's what I want us to think about and dwell on today. As we pray to close this out and as we lean into this next week of Lent. Everybody for Lent, you know, you always hear, well, we gave up chocolate or I gave up red meat or I gave up coffee. And those are good things. That's totally fine. But I want to challenge you today that as you're getting ready for Ash Wednesday, as you're getting ready to begin this season, what's the change that you could make during this 40-day season that could potentially change the rest of your life? What's the change that you could make that maybe God is leaning you towards? And even as I say it, I know for some of you, it comes to mind immediately. You know what it is. What's the change that you could make? It could be very small, that could potentially change the rest of your life. Men, for some of us in the room, I know for myself, this has been a huge part of my journey. For some of us, we need to get out of isolation and we need to start opening up to somebody. Because there's junk going on in our hearts and there's junk going on in our lives and nobody knows about it. And for 40 days of Lent, your change that you need to make is you need to find somebody that you can trust, that you can engage in community with. What's that little tiny change? Whether it's carving out a few moments to spend time with God each day. Well, I can't tell you what it is for you. What's that small change that God is calling you to make, to take a step down off the mountain that could potentially change the whole trajectory of the rest of your life? I want to finish today by reading a poem by an African-American poet named Howard Thurman. And this poem is so perfect for us today because it's a poem about finishing Christmas, finishing sweet baby Jesus, finishing all the wonderful goodness that we celebrated in that Christmas season, and even turning our attention past this season of Epiphany towards a season where we journey towards the cross. And he talks about the work of Christmas beginning. This is by Howard Thurman, called When the Song of Angels is Stilled. When the song of the angels is stilled, when the star in the sky is gone, when the kings and the princes are home, when the shepherds are back with their flocks, the work of Christmas begins to find the lost, to heal the broken, to feed the hungry, to release the prisoner, to rebuild the nations, to bring peace among people, to make music in the heart. Let's take a moment, if you would, just close your eyes. Just ask you to pray for just a moment and just ask the Lord that question. God, what is the small change that you're calling me to make that could change the entire trajectory of my life? What's the place where I sense that you're already at work and you're already bringing healing, but you're calling me to be brave and have courage and to take a step in that direction? What is it? Just take a moment and pray that and see what the Lord brings to your mind.